This is Lori Prox here with Kathy Todd of the Valdez Medical Clinic, also Providence Valdez Medical Center. Thanks again for joining us. We thought we'd cut right to the chase and talk about Valdez City Council meeting last night. There was an update on COVID, and there were a lot of good things covered in that meeting. And I think it was probably inevitable, but the mask mandate was extended. The council was wanting it extended and meet about it every other meeting or so, but the unified command pushed to extend it into January, and there was a little pushback from Dennis Fleming, but not on the mask mandate itself, but just who would approve it. He wanted it to see back it back at council for review and for the opportunity to discuss COVID, but the council, his motion failed, so off we go into January. I don't remember the date. Do you, Kathy?
No, it was the first meeting of January. So instead of being discussed at reapproved at 4 weeks, it was going to be reapproved at six weeks. They always have the option to take it away, but the incident command, and I think very rightly, said we really don't expect the situation to change enough for you guys to want to vote the opposite direction in just 4 weeks, probably not in six either, I will say. But you know, how much time are we going to spend on the actual voting on this? Because I'm sure it's going to get discussed. They always have a discussion item. But to add an actual formal approval each month, some of the council, I think the majority of the council, well, Dennis couldn't get a second, so six out of seven were saying, yeah, let's at least stretch it out to 6 weeks or kind of predict when things might change. And so they did stick with the first meeting. They're going to talk about it the first meeting in January instead of the last meeting in December.
All right, so that gets us through the holiday season, and little bit of discussion about new cases, which this last week has been a little bit crazy with cases, and you're right in the middle of it. So I'll stop talking and let you explain for folks who haven't caught. I know folks who have kids in the schools are very well versed in what's happening due to text messages and emails and phone calls. But for the general public, I think it's important to try to keep them informed. So we've been trying to send along updates from the superintendent in the email newspaper and such. But that was just a day or two ago, so that we sent out the newsletter. So it's everything keeps changing on a continuous basis. So tell us what's happening with current cases.
Yeah, well, so the number of current cases is not astronomical. I think it was 10 last time I looked. It may have changed. They update that at like 9:30 at night, and I must admit I didn't look at that.
Yeah, I think
but anyway, the total number of cases is not very big. What is different all of a sudden is how many people have been exposed or potentially exposed. So, for instance, at the elementary school, if you have a kid in one grade that was positive and was contagious when they were at school, either they were already sick when they were at school. Hopefully people don't do that, but oh no, they got sick on Saturday. I'm just picking a day. They got sick on Saturday. That means they were contagious two days before. And so if they went to school Thursday and Friday, then everybody who went to school Thursday and Friday, is at risk. And,
everyone who went to school and is in their bubble.
Exactly. So what I was going to say is the elementary school has been very careful. They're even entering by different doors. There's the second grade door to come into the building and the first grade door to come into the building, and they have two separate recesses instead of first and second grade put together, and they're eating in their classroom. So they're trying to keep their pods really, their circles or bubbles, very small, but it's still a whole class. No, all the second graders, it's not the whole school because of what they've been doing, but it's not just like, oh, somebody in your family got exposed, and so you have to quarantine the rest of the family. So all of a sudden, we have 150 people in quarantine, and a lot of people affected by that also. That is, there's some of the nurses that are not coming to work because all of a sudden their two kids are at home in quarantine, and their small children can't handle that by themselves. And it affects all of the middle school because all the teachers were exposed, not all of them, but so many teachers were exposed that it was either going to be a building full of a few kids and a whole bunch of substitute teachers, or everybody just go home and be online with your real teacher and online learning that they've been preparing for just in case all this time. So they're not out of school, but they're out of the building because so many people are in quarantine. So that's what's different, is how many people are in quarantine, because the school is one of the biggest bubbles that most people go to. And what you don't want to have happen is that, you know, if the whole second grade got it, nobody else did, that would be one thing. But, of course, all those second graders have families that have kids in other grades, have parents who might take it from their kid to their workplace. So quarantine is really, really important. The other interesting thing about this case is that this is one of the few that we've had where the original, kids who had the positive tests were being really careful, and we don't know where they got it from. So the question is whether they caught it at school on the bus. So we're trying to find where those people might be who were the contagious ones that gave it to them, because they may have given it to other people. Can you see what I mean? Case A that gave it to the two cases we know about, probably might have given it to somebody else too, who unbeknownst to them is giving it to somebody else. And if we can stop that, that will be really important to not end up with the whole town with COVID and medical facilities overwhelmed and everything shut down because there's nobody to go to work and all that sort of stuff.
And to give people an idea, the health nurse Terry Lynch last night said that currently just over 180 people in quarantine, and actually she said at one point there was about 200 in quarantine here in Valdez. So just for the public, that's the first time I'd heard a number last night. So quite a few people in quarantine. So describe for us, if you're a close contact, and I know this very well, but for everyone listening,
you could probably describe it better than I could, having done it a couple times.
If you're
problem with quarantine is that the thing that people don't understand, but if you think it through, it makes a lot of sense, is that if you're in quarantine, you should be in quarantine from everybody else who is in quarantine also. What? We're all in quarantine from the same, you know, it's not like one person's got the chickenpox and one person has the measles. No. The reason you're in quarantine, even from other people who are in quarantine, is that the whole thing is that we don't know who's going to actually catch it. If we knew that all the people in quarantine, all 200 of them, were all going to catch COVID, yeah, I have a big party and all those 200 people and stay away from the rest of us. But the problem is that that's not true. Only a few people of those are going to get it. The reason that the number in quarantine fluctuates after she said 200, well, then it's down, is probably because she says, well, you know, you weren't exposed that long. And that's true of a lot of the people. You know, was every teacher that was in contact with that middle school student going to catch it? No. But if those eight teachers hung out with each other, I think it's eight, if those eight teachers hung out with each other, then if one of them turns positive, then they've all been exposed to that teacher. So now they've had another exposure. So now they have to wait another 14 days. So the hard thing to do is that, no, you can't send the kids next door because the other kids are in quarantine too. And in fact, your second grader should stay away from your sixth grader so that your sixth grader doesn't have to do another 14 days of quarantine after the second grader gets it. So,
And it's making it difficult because a lot of folks have to go to
even within your household if they're in quarantine.
Have to go to work, have to, you know, take care of things. So there's different ways to get it done depending on your situation. People have different types of houses and space. Anyways, I know that the public health nurse has been very helpful, and now we have the school nurse. So I understand she helped with a lot of the calls. So that was great to get the health nurse or to get our school nurse on and able to assist with this.
Well, and a whole bunch of other people at the school too. One of the problems of why Anchorage is spreading so fast and being such a hotspot is that several weeks ago they had to give up on really doing good contact tracing, and they're depending on the person who has the symptoms or the positive COVID test to call all their contacts and instruct them because they just don't have enough public health nurses available to do that. And Valdez couldn't, you know, Terry and Pam couldn't have done that by themselves. But the school found out who all was in school that day, that the infectious kids were there, and then call those people and send out emails and gave instructions and whatever. So that really helped get the word out quickly, which is, of course, the most important thing is to not have all those potentially infectious people going back to school and exposing other people.
And we talked about that before, that it is, there's no rules against the person who does test positive or who is a close contact, you know, taking an initiative and maybe making their, you know, closing down a bit where they're going, what they're doing, all of those things prior to getting the call, which I know that was happening out there because, you know, the kids are all on their phones and, hey, I got a call. So I think a lot of kids kind of knew they might be in that boat before they actually got the call. So if you're aware of those situations, then folks can act accordingly or plan accordingly. Anyhow, with all of that, I understand from the meeting last night, there is an opportunity. Well, let's go to testing. If you are a close contact as well, because I think we've gone from, oh, there's not enough tests to, I think maybe even last time we spoke a week or two ago, that, you know, people can go get a test. Here's how they go get a test. And then Dr. Yeah. Alfaro last night said, well, we're limited on tests. So yeah. Discouraging yeah, so folks
things,
from getting them again.
Change. The rapid tests we've been doing here in town are limited because everything's getting behind partly because of the whole country. But in Alaska, they are really pushing, for instance, for Anchorage and Fairbanks, to, if you have a sniffle, if you have anything, even if you don't have anything, come get a test. And now they're sending all those tests to the state, which is going to put a big strain on the state lab. But they can do that because they've got a state lab right there in town in Anchorage, and so the test results come back pretty fast. But anybody, the whole state, anybody who has any symptom whatsoever, that's the same thing we've been saying in Valdez, if you have any symptom, please get tested. And we really want to do those tests quickly. And in Valdez, unfortunately, if you send off to the state for a test, it's probably going to take at least 3 days to come back, sometimes 5, 6, 7, 10. And that's only going to get worse with all this big push. So we really need those fast tests for people who have symptoms so that they can know whether they have strep throat or whether they have COVID sore throat, because we really want to, you know, we want to treat the strep throat people, but we mainly want to get the COVID people off the street, so to speak. And also, if they don't have COVID, get them back to doing what they were doing so they don't have to sit out for 10 days. Those tests, the state is a little bit short on, and so they only gave us half of our order. And they said we could order again halfway through the week, but it's a little tenuous. You know, planes wouldn't have been flying last night. So we need people who to not do what is in Anchorage and say, oh, yes, so I can just go to Dr. Alfaro's office or the medical clinic and get a quick test. Won't that be wonderful? We don't have enough to do that. And these, you know, hundreds of people who are on quarantine, we would really love to test all those people. And number one, find out if we've got any asymptomatic people in there who in your household do you really have to stay away from? Oh, it's the person who's positive, not just the person who's quarantined. But then the other thing that we would love to do is to say, oh, look at these 6 second graders, only one of them symptomatic, but here's it's all these second graders. Let's figure out their contacts to find that person A, who I was talking about a minute ago. Or, oh, it's everybody who was on that bus. Let's look at, you know, where those people. So you can't test out of quarantine, so those people are still going to be in quarantine for 14 days, but we would really like to test them all. And so they're going to set up a big thing, you know, just like flu clinic, they're going to set up a big thing over at the school just for the people who have been invited from all those contacts. That will be plenty. Thank you. All those contacts to just run them all through in their cars very quickly, send a huge batch of tests to the state on Thursday.
So if someone is in quarantine, a parent would expect to get a call and give permission to set up a time to do this. Is that how that would work?
Yeah, I think it's not going to be a set up a time thing. I think it's going to be, you know, like between, I heard 10 to 1, but I'm not sure that that's true. So, you know, go by the bulletin you get, not by what I just said. I think it's going to be just like you would go get your flu shot at one of the point of dispensing drills. Okay, it's going to be between these hours and get in your car, and a lot of these are kids that couldn't drive themselves anyway. Get in your car and go stand in line, and they're going to have a whole bunch of people there to swab and to take your paperwork and whatever, so that it should go relatively quickly.
And this is voluntary?
It's voluntary, because, as I say, it doesn't help you get out of quarantine. It helps the community figure out where it came from so that we can make sure it doesn't spread any farther than absolutely necessary.
And will those individuals get their report as well as the health nurse use them? Okay, for...
Oh, yeah, they'll get them.
For data, okay.
But it's going to take a couple days, because they get packaged, they'll get sent out on the courier service on Friday morning, and then the state lab works, I think, 24/7. I know they work 7 days a week, but they have to get all the way to Fairbanks for us, usually, then they work on them, and then they send them back by electronic means.
And one thing I know people keep mentioning is, hey, these people actually had COVID, but they're back on the street sooner than people who were contacts. And so if you would explain how that works and why that is. I know we've covered that before, but I think that's important.
It still seems ironic, yeah. So the thing is that it probably takes... If I was exposed to a person with COVID right now, and then I tested 10 minutes later, that's obviously going to be a wasted test, because I can't possibly have enough virus multiplied in my system for there to be enough for the test to pick up. And so we know that people are carry the most viruses, and it's going to be the easiest to pick up the first day or maybe two that they're symptomatic, and then 2 days before that. So basically the people who are in quarantine have to wait those 4 or 5 days when it couldn't have been picked up, and then their incubation period is done, and then they would be positive. Some people take up to 10, 12 days to become positive, and then they're off the hook. So that's why it's 14 days, because you've got those four or five days at the beginning. If you already know the person's sick, they've already done that waiting part, and that's why it's 10 days after you start a minor case. If you're sick in the hospital, that's different. But the people who have, you know, not a lot of symptoms, yeah, they feel cruddy at home, but those people have to stay away from the rest of us for 10 days. But they already did their 4 days of waiting.
All right, well, thanks for clearing that up. And then...
Did it clear it up? Basically, we know that if you don't catch it by 14 days after exposure, you're probably not going to. And so that's why the 14 comes from.
And of course, all the folks in quarantine, just so people know how it works behind the scenes, get information and then a chart to fill out, taking temperatures every day, and also monitoring for symptoms. There's a big list of symptoms. So if any of those symptoms arise, then that's the time to get a test. And how would one go about that? I know the testing, how that all works, seems to be changeable as well.
Yeah, so those people, anybody who's symptomatic can get a quick test. Those aren't quite as sensitive. That is, you might get you're more likely to get a false negative test, but you can get it a lot faster here than if you, with a quick test, than if you get sent to the state. So we want that information fast enough that we're willing to accept the fact that it's not quite as sensitive. So anybody with any symptoms needs to go in right away. So in quarantine, you're not supposed to go anywhere. Somebody else is supposed to get your groceries and bring in your pizza, and you're not supposed to go anywhere. You can go outside and go for a walk without any people around you. But the one thing is for medical care. And so, yes, you are allowed to go to the testing stations, and both of those take reservations so that you're not waiting in line a long time. But basically, you're in your car, somebody swabs you, They have on a PPE so that they're not going to catch it from you. And then you go home and deal with the results of that.
All right. And I know a lot of folks looking toward a vaccine, and it's kind of funny. I get a lot of press releases from the state, and, you know, they're preparing, you know, they're saying we're preparing now to receive the vaccine and, you know, we should have it together by December. But I'm reading things from Moderna looking like, you know, we're quite a ways down the road from that, the reality of getting a vaccine. You know, other folks are saying general range of April to June 2021, and that's optimistic. So what are you thinking on that timeline-wise for vaccine? And I know there's now two, and as of today, maybe there's another one that's getting toward the end of testing.
Yeah. Well, the more different companies that come up with really great vaccines, the better off, because then they can all be working on making some. Because if you think about the number of people in the world, or even in this country, or even who are in hot spots, it's huge. It's just gigantic. And so we need to worry of, you know, basically there is not going to be enough vaccine to give to everybody who wants one instantaneously. So even though, you know, that the vaccines that have currently passed their phase three trials and are on fast track approval by the FDA. FDA usually takes its time and takes a long time to get through the paperwork. They're trying to facilitate the paperwork so that they can get that out very quickly. There still are not going to be enough doses for everybody to have one for a long time, as in months. I mean, I guess that's not a long time usually, but it's going to feel like a long time. And then you have to also realize that it takes a while to work. And if not everybody gets one, it's going to take longer to kind of get the herd immunity going so that it will actually slow the spread to near nothing so that we can, you know, take off our masks and whatever. It's going to take a little while. One of the vaccines has to be frozen at really cold temperatures, not your average, you know, little freezer that you have in the clinic. And so that's going to make it trickier. And so Alaska may be later to get it. I was told one of the vaccines is going to be shipped in huge batches. So even to essential healthcare workers, it may go to big medical centers first because they can use up that many vaccines, whereas some little hospital in Alaska may not be able to do 10,000 doses to hospital workers. You know, we may have to wait until one of the other vaccines. It doesn't have to be in such complicated storage situations get sent to Alaska.
Well, that's funny. I know you had mentioned that, and I read that it was touted Moderna's vaccine, big advantage over Pfizer.
Pfizer's have to be frozen.
Yeah, and Pfizer, I guess it's 36 to 46 degrees Fahrenheit is what it needs to. It can be stored for a month. So is that a long time for a vaccine?
Minus 36, not plus 36. Minus 36, yeah. Yeah. So I am told that on the Pfizer vaccine, it has to stay that cold. And then once it's thawed, you've got 5 days. And so the only way to keep it that cold would be to keep it on dry ice. You see anybody making dry ice in Valdez? No. So the city's actually on the line to get one of these freezers, one of these really super duper freezers, and maybe supplying things to like Glen Allen and Cordova and whatever if we've got the freezer for the region. But as I say, if they need to send out a whole bunch of doses simultaneously, that may be more than Alaska's allotment per capita or per old person or per whatever.
And can you talk to efficacy rates? You know, I know they're comparing rates and both of these vaccines seems to be much higher rate than the flu shot. But what does that really mean for... You know, dumb it down for us out here.
Well, so I think one of them said 90%, one of them said 95%. That would mean that if 100 people went out and were exposed to COVID, and usually all 100, you know, in some way that would make 100 people get sick, then if they had all had the vaccine, only 5 of them would get sick, or only 10 of them would get sick. So that's not zero, but that helps a lot, because if we have person A out there coughing in everybody's face, and, you know, a whole bunch of people were going to get sick, if only 5% of them get sick, then the rate of spread is going to be much less than if 100% of them got sick after they were coughing in their face. So, of course, it's not 100% after you cough in their face. It's, you know, depends on how long you were around them and whether you had a mask on and all those things. But if you could take whatever your chance was of getting COVID and make it into 5% of that or 10% of that, that's really nice. So you could be exposed to 10 times as many or 20 times as many people before you got COVID, to say it a whole bunch of different ways.
Well, and we don't really know. I think someone asked that last night. What are the odds of you getting COVID if you've been around someone who's positive? And it's...
And of course, the definition, you know, the problem is, what does being around that person mean?
Well, I mean, we've defined that.
Early
so
on from China, that only 20% of the people in the household, only 20% of close contacts caught it from somebody. Well, that included people that you saw at work and people at home. There's a recent thing saying if you've got a preschooler with COVID in your house, there's a 50% chance that somebody's going to get it. Why? Because you got to take care of preschoolers. You can't stick them in their room with the video games and serve them meals and have them be happy. They just can't do it. And so, you know, there is different amounts of exposure.
All right. And I think it's important to note as well, like this, I think Moderna's test was 95 people was the survey sample. 30,000 people apparently in line to keep testing. So, you know, I guess they measure all these the same, but the initial tests are looking better than many other vaccines or things that they're working on. So is that what you're getting? Definitely.
Yeah. And when they go to start testing a vaccine, at first they just do it on a few people and see whether they can measure antibodies in their blood. But eventually you have to actually try it on people and have them go out there and be exposed. And fortunately, I guess, because people are not all wearing masks and doing things like the gatherings and that sort of thing, there were enough people who were enough exposed among those 30,000 or whatever that they were testing that they could actually get a efficacy rate. If this were a disease that only, you know, if it weren't burgeoning at the moment, you could have put somebody who was part of the test group in Alaska in May, for instance, and it wouldn't have worked very well because nobody was getting COVID, and so you couldn't tell whether the vaccine was working. Right now, you can tell whether the vaccine's working because there's so many people getting it.
Yeah.
Silver lining, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. We got to take what we can get, I suppose. And so I know there concern and mask mandate renewed. However, it sounds like the feel from, and you're on the school board would like to get back in person school and try to control this, and definitely trying to keep, I think the city manager said the Valdez Unified Command would like to kind of get this under control and keep businesses open and all of that. So can you speak to that, the idea of getting back out there after COVID and how we keep the cogs moving?
Well, I think what people are trying to do this time is to, in this part of the wave, what we did in the spring was close things down really tightly. You know, that's why we don't have an airline anymore, because all of a sudden nobody was supposed to fly anywhere. You know, our whole town was quarantined, and it worked really
well.
They
might have been going down before that, but that's an aside.
Well, that's true.
Past,
okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I agree with you. But you know, it worked really well. We ended up with, you know, next to no cases in the whole state for weeks and weeks there. But we also ended up with, you know, you can't go to the dentist. You can't have any surgery other than, you know, if you're dying, you can't get your hair cut. You know, this business and that business are don't have any business because they're closed down. You can't go to a restaurant, and the restaurants can't pay their workers. And, you know, it's a big mess if you have to close everything down. And so people are trying to figure out how it is that we can keep going. You know, what is the minimum that we can do and flatten the curve? And right now it is not flat in Alaska. It's just going skyrocketing. It looks like a cliff rather than a nice little hill like it did in the spring. And so trying to figure out ways to turn that cliff into a hill and flatten it out before it overwhelms the medical system, and before too many people die, but without having to say all the stores are closed, all the kids have to go home from school permanently, and that takes everybody working at it really hard, doing the things that are less than that, wearing a mask, not having Thanksgiving dinner with people from four states, or even from Anchorage, perhaps, unless you've got a long table.
Well, and I think important to note, and maybe a good place to end, is that behind all these decisions and behind everything going on, there are people, and for the most part, all doing the best that they can with what they've got. So I definitely know it's really easy to say, well, we want school back. But if you don't have, if you have teachers that are close contacts, then there's no one to teach those kids. So definitely dig a little deeper in the people behind why things are happening or not happening, or why things are changing. Many times it's people are short. I know I'm short staffed. You're short staffed. You are a private business owner with the clinic as well. So, you know, balancing the, you know, oh, I don't have business right now, and the needs of providing medical care for our community. A lot of people find themselves in that position, you know, and
there are things that you can do short of that. Like it was discussed at the council meeting last night that they left intact the exceptions to who has to wear a mask. But it was also pointed out that if you're somebody who is too anxious to wear a mask or you can't breathe when you're wearing a mask, rather than going to the grocery store without a mask, they would be happy to deliver your groceries to the curbside for you. So that if you're somebody who can't wear a mask, maybe don't go to the post office at noon. Either go at midnight or get somebody else to go get your mail for you. So that you who can't wear the mask at least are not contributing to the problem.
Yeah, there's lots of different options out there, and just shout out to people trying to innovate and change and do things a little differently so that they fit our crazy times. So
yeah, people really have worked on it very hard as to how we're going to do this and keep going.
I did appreciate that from, you know, I think it's important to take a moment, and Mayor O'Neill did last night to say, hey, you know, I think there are a lot of things that are going well where we are. So anyways, for folks who are changing, innovating, trying to make things happen, you got a shout out last night. So if you weren't listening to the council meeting, we'll repeat that again, because it's not easy. By any stretch of the imagination, but it's real easy to kind of get focused on what's not going right for you. I know I've been there. But it's great to look at people behind some of these decisions and try to understand what they're trying to do and get at, and have a little understanding with all that. So with that said, that might be a good note, unless you've got any other updates for us.
Wear a face covering, wash your hands, keep your bubble as small as you can possibly keep it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Well, we'll talk with you again next week.